Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, there you go. All right, you want to talk McIntyre at 62 points or Dan Hollins at 87 points?
Welcome to the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, your premier North American rugby podcast, growing rugby one fan at a time.
And welcome, Rugby Rant fans. It's the big guy, Scott Ferrari, here with Nick Chiavetta. You know Nick, 2022 MLR champion, former New York Iron Worker, currently, what is your title, president of the board? Like, is it like a official title of the Players Association, or?
I'm chairman of the player board.
Chairman of the board, the old Nicky Blue Eyes treatment. That's always perfect. That's always a great thing to say. But again, Nick's here. He's chairman of the board of the United States Rugby Players Association, representing those MLR players that are now collectively bargained with the league. Nick, thank you very much for coming in, man. Really appreciate you. We know this is a busy time for you. Time difference. You're out in the UK. So really appreciate it. Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Great to chat to you. Former head of the Rooney Rooster Roosters. I think it's a great time to be chatting and giving the message out. I mean, what we've been able to achieve through voluntary recognition is the beginning of the process to get MLR players' voices heard officially.
Yep.
Right. And so we're very proud that we've taken this step. We're glad that we were able to come to an agreement with the league for going what would probably be a vitriolic election, to use your words from a few minutes ago. It puts us in a good place going forward, and it sets the stage for, you know, a real fair arm's length negotiation with players, you know, for them to capture their value from MLR contracts.
Absolutely. And it was good to hear. Us, the guys at the Rugby Rant, have been talking about this for like 2 or 3 years now. We bring it up constantly, especially when there's issues. But let's get right into it. So you retired from professional rugby, but you decided to continue your involvement with the Players Association. Is that just something that you just had this need to complete? Was it just a desire? Because I know you were involved from the Eagles side, correct?
Yeah, so I was elected in 2021 to lead the Players Association. At the time, we were focused on the official representative of the men's and women's 15s and 7s. We continue to be we play that role in negotiations with USA Rugby. At the time, I was playing in the MLR. My MLR colleagues and myself were constantly reminded of the fact that the MLR was without a players association, and reminded of the fact that, you know, life as an MLR player can be very complicated with the contracting structures. Some of the things you're exposed to from a player safety point of view. And fundamentally, you know, these are difficult things to have a say in changing without without being, you know, without being a players association, without having a voice, you know, under federal law to help sort of advocate for your rights as an employer. So as an employee. I think, you know, we kind of set this as a goal from 2021, myself and the other guys who are playing in the MLR, to make sure that we pushed this as hard as we could to try to get to the end result, which is voluntary recognition, or, you know, through other means, you know, certification as the Players Association for MLR players. I couldn't have stepped back after retirement and let this opportunity slip away. So I decided to stick around and continue to push it through last season and then through the off season to the point we are today, which is, you know, very thankfully voluntarily recognized and ready to take the next step with the league as full stakeholders in the future of the MLR.
And, you know, it's good to know, and you see it in other leagues, you have former players who lived it, who understand what's going on within the league to kind of push this effort and lead the players' associations, because they know the best, right? You know, you have firsthand knowledge of some of the issues that come about. So my next question, really, you know, at the start of last summer, I know that the Players Association filed with the National Labor Relations Board to be recognized. You know, how did talks with the league and your representation of the players, how did it come about between now and then to really get this going?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess it's kind of a long story. we had some talks with the league last year. We didn't sort of see them ending up with us being voluntarily recognized through those talks. So we felt it was necessary to take the step to file for an election. We had the backing of 80%+ of players. You know, we were pretty confident that we were going to win an election. So we filed. Timing on filing these things is a bit, you know, hard to control, right? Because the labor board is, you know, sort of a meandering beast.
Yep.
So we weren't really entirely sure when we'd hear back about the election. As it turns out, it took quite a few months for them to sort through or to get to our case. They decided they're going to have a mail-in election that coincides with the start of this season, right? So that was the overarching. That was the landscape we were dealing with during the off-season, figuring that out, and then sort of gearing up for that election, which was meant to start in a couple weeks' time. But during the off-season, there were a couple changes in the MLR. Two teams dropped out. Team moved to LA. And during these sorts of pre-bargaining periods, there's, after an election has been filed, there's certain things that the employer needs to sort of keep consistent to make sure that, you know, they're following the letter of federal law. And the prevailing circumstances for the league made it very difficult for the league to do that. And that probably created some legal exposure from the league's point of view that would have been... I would have sort of made it very difficult for the end result of the election or any case that came out of it, not go in the way of there being a union, right? So fundamentally, that is likely what brought them back to speak to us about getting this done to an agreement, which, you know, we were very happy to entertain from minute one, as long as we could see that the end goal from the agreement was immediate recognition of the union and a path towards crafting a CBA. So that's a long-winded way of saying that, you know, fundamentally, what we found is that we're not particularly far apart in what we want. You know, we have this common goal that you know, we share in the success of MLR and rugby in the United States. And I think when we recognized that, when we started to chat back in December, I felt pretty confident from there that we'd be able to come to an agreement that resulted in voluntary recognition and got us to where we are today and where we want to go.
You spoke about you know, kind of the turmoil prior to the season. You had, you know, the Iron Workers folding, you had Toronto folding, you know, two two teams folding for kind of different reasons. You had the relocation of Atlanta to LA, and then you had the creation of the Anthem RC down in Charlotte. You know, causing a lot of volatility, causing a lot of volatility for the players. They don't know where they're going to go. We're going to have dispersal drafts. You know, you have guys who are trying to line up visas to come into the country. And you know, all that kind of falls by the wayside because, you know, a team ceases operation. Do you think, you know, part of that is that part of your drive to for your guys to really bargain part of that to say, hey, what kind of communication are we getting? Because we've my point being, historically, it seems as though we've seen the same type of communication. There is none. And you know, not being in it, I know from players and talking to players, like they get told the day before sometimes, and then that's it, you know?
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, from a league's point of view, when these situations do happen, right, and the Players Association doesn't prevent teams from folding, that's not really our role. I mean, an investor can decide not to participate, you know, if he doesn't want to participate. You know, but from a PR point of view, it really behooves the league to have a players association in place, right? Because when these things do happen, you know, there's PR value in the players association being consulted. Mm-hmm. Even if the solution is suboptimal, and like, let's the player welfare outcomes for players on the two teams who folded, on the guys who have been shifted around late in the year, even this week, I mean, you still see it happening. Guys going to Anthem, right? It's very difficult to appraise all the damage that was done, right? It's very difficult to say that optimal outcomes, you know, occurred for every player. So it's a very challenging environment that these players are in, and it can be awful. I mean, you have guys whose stuff might be in New York or Toronto who are back in New Zealand for the holidays or wherever they may be, and then, you know, everything is just logistical nightmare, financial nightmare. Guys are owed money; it's a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. From a PR point of view, the league can mitigate these disasters by, you know, trying to reach some sort of agreement or some sort of negotiation with a players' association in the interim to help communication with the players to make it clear that these things are coming down the pipe, right? Mm-hmm. That might be a very convoluted answer that doesn't quite get you.
Well, I mean, you have to the part of it is you have to figure out those details to say when we're in a situation like this, what is bargain to say? Is there an employee assistance program that we can have? Is there a relocation amount we can give, you know, as part of a severance package? But again, all collectively bargain. And so I don't think your answer is convoluted as much as you just don't have the details yet because you're in the middle of it. But that's what it provides.
I think what you Ed's done there has done a much better job answering my question, the question that I have, right? There's a lot of value that can be provided for the Players Association in situations like this, right? Fundamentally, during this offseason, the value could have been in PR. In the future, there's a whole lot of negotiation that can go around what happens in these circumstances, right? And the timing and how things need to be ordered and processed through. So, yeah, great answer. It's, you know, 9:30 at home. I'm in the middle of practice.
And prior to recording, I was explaining to Nick, I do have a lot of experience in contract negotiations with the unions. Yeah, specifically the Teamsters, which, you know, when they strike, they like to, you know, rock the cars and all that fun stuff if you're crossing a picket line. But, I think that's great. You know, from a PR standpoint, you know, from a fan standpoint, and we see it in fan comments and things like that, you know, it seemed as though the league, you know, was very resistant to this move, and you kind of spoke about it before, about your guys' efforts to create it and kind of what pushed it. But from a fan perspective, we hear a lot about, oh, you know, people have this association. Well, unions are just there to try and drive up wages. I know that's not correct. You know that's not correct. So if you could just talk about, like, maybe three or four points, they don't have to be detailed points about what, you know, you guys may be looking for in the future.
I mean, like, there's some fundamental things in the way that MLR contracts are structured that I don't think any player is particularly happy about. You know, the way in which you can be let go at any time for any reason. The rights that you assign to teams to transfer you around, whether you're an associate player or an SBC player, the structure of the associate player contract in itself is particularly difficult to wrap your head around. I think, you know, from a contracting point of view, we're looking to get to a place where, you know, players coming into the league, whatever their background is, you know, if they're, you know, seasoned professional from overseas, they're an Eagle, they're a guy straight out of college, they want to be able to look at this contract and feel protected. They want to be able to look at this contract and feel like, you know, they can pursue a career in rugby in the United States or in North America if there's, you know, teams in other countries. And I don't think that the contract that they're signing currently really holds that risk balance in a good place. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's one thing. You know, beyond that, you know, there's no health insurance for players. Mm-hmm. You guys have workers' comp, but their families aren't covered and they don't have personal health insurance coverage. I mean, I know some states have a mandate, like Massachusetts guys, more or less required to buy it, subsidized, etc. But it's not the case for all the players. We'd like to get to a place where that is.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is part of the deal of being an MLR player, right? We understand that that's complex, given the bargaining unit, given the dispersed nature of the league, given the league's finances. But that's a pretty critical piece. You know, we talked as well, you know, in our public campaign about quality of some of the fields that players are playing on and whether or not they're safe to be playing high level rugby on. I think that, again, a tricky problem to solve from a financial point of view. And you kind of need to have measured outcomes here to make a case for why these things need to change. So that's something that we'll look into with full knowledge that, you know, as the league progresses financially, venues should improve, right? So we're eyes wide open about the state of the league as we look ahead to collective bargaining. We're not here talking about everyone should get paid $1 million. It's not really about that, right? It's about making sure that guys who come into the league can look at their contract, feel protected, and understand that, you know, if I signed a 2-year deal for X team, right, the expectation is that like just be fired.
Yeah.
Don't fall into their budget anymore, right? There's protections that need to be put in place. So, leave it there for now.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of my pushback on some fans that complain, well, why doesn't New York just find a field, a grass field to play on? I'm like, have you ever been to the state of New York, especially lower New York?
No.
You can't to build something like that would be, $25 million. I mean, you could look at they're building the stadium in Queens for Queens FC, the soccer stadium. Yeah. And Steve Cohen's building that, and he's the richest man in, sports owner in America right now. So you have to, again, I think incremental is the word, the key word there.
And I think the other thing to add here is that there's a whole host of things that will no doubt come out, in our internal sort of bargaining discussions with players this year and during the offseason, right, where we start to come to a coherent, proposal for a CBA. So I can't say that whatever list I've come up with here is exhaustive or even, going to be where we end up, but it really is going to be down to the players to decide what they want to bargain for in that first CBA.
So that actually leads to my next question is, so what's the next step procedurally for you guys? That's to come together and get, more cohesive, areas you guys want to bargain.
So I think our ability to communicate with players is really good. I think that's why we got to this point today. I think we need to desperately refocus our messaging now that we've got past the organizing point of view, because you kind of get two stages in the life of a players association or a new union, right? You get the organizing stage where you're focused on getting over the line. And then after that, it's like, well, shit, now we've got to bargain a contract. So we're shifting our messaging to focus more on the value that we can add, understanding what the process looks like, from here through bargaining. And then there's going to be, elections on each team to identify official player leaders for each team, player representatives. From there, we'll form a bargaining committee and start to have, conversations around how it's going to look when we do come to the end of the collective bargaining.
Nice. And on top of that, without having any clear knowledge of how long this is going to take, do you think we could have something ratified by the end of this season, going into next season? Or at least a negotiation will there be enough on the table for you guys to have a legit negotiation going into next season? Maybe not ratify, but at least have a really healthy negotiation going into next season, 2025.
I don't know if I'm going to answer that question.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't think I have the answers yet to that.
That, again, it's early on, and I know the process more so than other people. It does take way longer than you would think to get this done, which is why most unions are on 3-year to 5-year contracts, and they start negotiations if it's a 3-year contract, they start negotiations in the first 18 after the first 18 months. And it's a 5-year, it's starting in year 3, and then usually they go right to the deadline, unfortunately. But and then just 2 more quick questions. This is more about the new MLR team, the anthem. What do you think about World Rugby's kind of mandate and involvement in the team? Do you think that helps you being an Eagle, our muddied pathways, I would say, to become an Eagle? Do you think World Rugby coming down and mandating this team and saying, we want this to be an exclusive pathway, do you think that helps, the not only the American rugby player, but do you think it helps the MLR?
I mean, I don't think this was pushed by World Rugby, right, to happen. I think this was a Scott Lawrence, USA Rugby, and MLR joint venture going to World Rugby and saying, hey, we're ready to roll. Can you jump in on this? Taking off my Players Association hat as a former Eagle, I think it's huge, right? It's so important that young American players get consistent game time with guys who they'll eventually share the field with as Eagles. I think this is an interesting model. If you compare it to, the way that the Drua have taken Super Rugby by storm, and some of the SLAR teams, it's just critical that guys get minutes and as high quality minutes as they can possibly get. You can look at this competition and say, Maybe it's the MLR. Maybe it's a stronger competition than most of the teams in SLR. I mean, it's probably a similar level, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is probably easier logistically to handle.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, a lot of these guys who are currently with MLR teams probably aren't going to play many minutes in MLR, so this is their chance to do that. So it's great, and it beds them into, you know, the U.S. system now, right? So you'll have one of the U.S. coaches is running it, whose name I can't remember, which is terrible. But yeah, I met him over the summer in Portugal when the U.S. played in the build up to the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But like, very confident in the pipeline that Scott's building here and his vision for where he wants the Eagles to go. So I think it's great. Great.
And just the final question, you know, there's always a big debate about foreign player slots. And I believe Brian Ray just put out a thing talking about the change that started last season, which apparently nobody knew about, that foreign player spots can only be 12 max, which is, you know, something that honestly I thought was floated when the league first started, to be honest, but I guess it was, you know, maybe that was just the thinking and, you know, they were kind of actually holding people to that now. Is that something that the Players Association is going to look at as far as, you know, limiting slots, expanding slots? Is that, you think that's part of the purview of what some of your guys are talking about in the bargaining unit?
I mean, as the Players Association, we represent all players in the MLR, mm-hmm. right? So consult with, you know, the player block and understand if that's the direction they want to head. But I can't mm-hmm. sit here and say we're trying to, you know, disenfranchise the foreign player because mm-hmm. we have a lot of them. We depend on them now for some aspect of the level of play. So it's a bit more nuanced than just saying, yeah, we should have fewer. You know, I don't believe that's the case now. I think it's something the players will have to align on.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you in hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there. Supporting you on and off the field.
I mean, for me, I've always felt I think the survival of the league right now depends on those foreign players coming in, and we do have young foreign players coming in, getting some time playing excited rugby. You know, you talk about quality minutes, right? Right now, what we can do to give those young Eagles or those Hawks or those Falcons quality minutes is trying to get the best quality players we can, and that includes guys who play outside North America. You know, they play, been playing for X amount of years. They have X amount of talent, and iron sharpens iron, as they say. So I always feel that it's right now, the level of foreign players, I think, is good. You know, as far as the slotting is concerned from a fan perspective. And again, I think now that we have Anthem going and we have Scott Lawrence kind of building this system, and not just building the system on the Anthem side, but if you look at every team, all the teams, you know, the original six style teams have a lot of guys who are USA eligible, who are Eagles, who've put in minutes. You know, and as the new teams are coming, you're seeing guys like Miami Benjamin Asso going to Miami. I think he might be going to Anthem now, is what, you know, what I heard. I don't know. Yeah. I hear a lot of things, Nick. You know, I don't believe most of them. But my point being is, even the new teams coming in, new ownership, are seeing what having American rugby players on the team means. And it's not just about having the flashy foreign player all the time. It really builds cohesion.
The fundamental anecdote I would always use when talking about this is, like, you look at the crowds that would come out. Listen, in New York, we didn't get big crowds.
Mm-hmm.
For one reason or another, whatever it might be. Look at the people who came out for Connor Buckley and John Powell when they
Yeah, absolutely.
Extra 75 to 100 people for free play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that was because, you know, Connor had his entire family show up.
Well, like, the band was, they're New York guys. Like, that's how you build a fan base. It's like, you need
absolutely
places playing in those places. And it's huge.
Absolutely. And
right? Mm-hmm. Frankly, like, American fans don't care about, you know, these fantastic players, and they add a ton of value to teams. American fans just don't care about watching. Right? They'd much rather come out and see someone they know, someone from New York, someone who sounds like them. So, like, that is something that I know, you know, owners around the league recognize, right? And want to make sure that they maintain that.
Absolutely. And then, so one final question before we go, and this is more of a personal question. I know you've retired for rugby, but if Oxford says, hey, you want to throw on the jersey and go out there for a shift, I mean, are you at the point where you're going to play a little bit? Are you going to be in an old boys league? Like what's going on? Have you gotten the itch?
No, I don't have the itch. I still coach. So I coach Oxford, which is great. And that keeps me involved. But I haven't gotten the itch yet. Well, I had an opportunity to play in a friendly in December, and I said no, which was smart. I think I will. Yeah, I don't expect the itch to come back.
Listen, you've played way more rugby than I can ever even think about. So I hear you. I definitely hear you.
Yeah.
And listen, enjoy your retirement, and you're still involved in the game on, you know, two completely different levels, which I'm sure as you went through, you know, even your college career, you never thought probably I would be part of rugby on almost a 10,000 foot level from a coaching perspective and a players association perspective, right?
Yeah, I think I'm very grateful for the game, and I think where it's brought me and how it's prepared me for, you know, life after rugby and the real job that I do, you know, with most of my hours during the week. I'm just happy to be involved and happy to hopefully be making, you know, having a positive effect on the players that I coach's lives, and then hopefully long term some impact on the way the MLR kind of treats players.
I mean, from an outsider's perspective, I'm going to say it's absolutely great, and you absolutely are making an impact. Again, incremental changes. You can't look at this as a wholesale change, right? You know, happening right now. Yeah, incremental. There's a time frame that's longer than, you know, you would think. But again, it's part of the work. It's part of how you get from A to B, and it's part of how to get player safety up to a standard where it needs to be. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to be, you know, on a 5-year plan as far as getting the league and the players up to where they need to be, because we're going to have a Rugby World Cup coming here soon. So starting it now is setting us up for the future. And Nick, thank you so much again for joining us. Really appreciate it. Really always appreciate if I have a question, I could just kind of, you know, pop in and ask you. And always appreciate your time coming on the show. So thank you very much, man. Hopefully you can get some sleep soon. I know you have a couple more of these you got to do.
Just one more.
All right, cool. All right, good.
It's McCarthy.
Awesome, Nick. Thank you so much.
All right. See ya.
See ya.